Welcome to another episode of We Are Curious, and today we're sitting with Eric Asuma. Eric?
Hi, Mokaneno. Hope you've had a good week.
I have. How about yourself?
Mine has been good. Can't complain. I've been following up on a number of things, of course, trying to keep busy with the markets, and of course, the business side of things, but all is well. Can't complain.
What are you looking forward to this week? Or rather, what's something that happened this week that really caught your attention?
Interesting. Locally, a number of things, but I think most importantly, what I was watching was banks have begun releasing their quarterly results. I've seen a number of things, new happenings like APSA launching WhatsApp sort of banking, which I think quite interesting. Locally, also something that caught my attention was the performance of the Kenya shilling. It's actually been sliding, and it's something that that maybe we can touch on this particular podcast. And globally, of course, the earnings is still continuing. We've also seen the US, the infrastructure bill. Maybe we can touch on that briefly. And then maybe what also caught my attention was what's happening in Ethiopia, right? The escalation of the tensions of between the Tigray region and the Ethiopian national government. It's escalating very fast, so maybe you can also touch on that.
Yeah, I think, of course, what's happening in Tigray also caught my attention, specifically because I've talked to a couple of friends, in especially decision makers in the banking sector, who had planned to go to Ethiopia, but then they're now putting their plans on hold. And I really hope it doesn't get to the point where Safaricom also has to make adjustments to Safaricom Ethiopia in 2022. I think another thing that really, really caught my eye also internationally, I would say, is Adidas selling Reebok. First of all, I never knew that Adidas owns Reebok, and from a shoe head, this is such an awkward moment. But away from that, I see that something interesting that caught our listeners' attention is CIC, and Chuck specifically hopes really we get to talk about CIC today. What's happening in the counter? Do you think it's overpriced or underpriced? I think something else that I was keen on was foreign direct investments in Kenya, which inched close to 1 trillion in 2019, and we saw that Uganda, Tanzania, Netherlands, and Rwanda are amongst top countries that are invested, that Kenya invested in rather.
Interesting. Maybe you can start briefly with the Kenya shilling. So maybe for those who've been following up the forex markets, the local currency has been sliding for the last few days. Today, from there was a mean exchange rate of about 109.19. Which means that it's. It actually breached in as much as it breached the 109 level earlier this year around March there. I think for the last few weeks it's not been steady, and a story that appeared on Kenyan Wall Street whereby one of our team members interviewed financial analysts in the market, and their thoughts were that the shilling is facing pressure from global crude oil prices, which are pointing towards a steep rise in the coming months, and a spike in demand for dollars for Kenyan importers as well has been driving that. There's also a speculation that many Kenyans are converting their shillings into US dollars to hedge against the perceived inflation in the coming months. So from a forex level, that's what's been happening. Maybe something that we can also speak about will be on the Safaricom share price. Today the share price actually touched touched an all-time high of about 43.20. I don't know if that's gone up. Let me just check as we speak. And there isn't really major news that has happened this week, but maybe what has happened is the last week's news that Safaricom could be granted that the opportunity on the mobile money side. I think that could be a driver. The other thing that, however, there's a risk, the escalating tensions in Ethiopia, and given that Safaricom is heavily investing into that particular market, I believe that could affect the tensions in Ethiopia could affect that significantly, given that the US is currently funding that particular project.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something to also watch out for.
I think for me, first of all, I'd like to go back to the dollar,
mm-hmm.
Specifically, because earlier this week also we had statistics that came. I think I saw it on Mir's channel,
mm-hmm.
that the essentially the distribution of Kenya's debt,
mm-hmm.
and we saw that only 3.7% of Kenya's debt is owed to the IMF and 71% of Kenya's bilateral debt is owed to China. My concern would be how much of our debt is dollar denominated, and given that the dollar is currently trading at 109.3 shillings, what will that mean for our debt repayments?
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And also, I love something that you mentioned here with regards to the Kenyan shilling weakening against the dollar, specifically because of oil prices globally.
Mm-hmm.
I think earlier this week, well, to be specific, 2 days ago, we saw that President Joe Biden had called upon the OPEC countries to boost oil production.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think maybe, first of all, do you think the oil prices that will be announced tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
are going to be high, given that we've seen a rise in prices? But do you think the OPEC Plus are ramping up production will actually sort of lower the prices, which might affect us positively?
Okay. Locally, I think there's an anticipation that the prices of oil might go up,
mm-hmm.
In the coming months. I think that's one of the reasons why the shilling has been declining. But my thinking is there isn't much to be expected, basically. But you know, the OPEC has been, they've actually been cutting the oil production targets.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, from the recent start, there hasn't been much change over the last 2 months.
Right.
So hoping probably a Biden's call, maybe some of these OPEC plus countries could consider a cut of the coming few months.
Sorry, just to bring you back, Eric. Actually, I found data on our dollar denomination, and
mm-hmm.
it's that in terms of currency composition,
mm-hmm.
A huge part of our debt is actually dollar denominated, which is a whooping 65%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And this is followed by the euro, which is at around 20%. Again, this is data as of April 2021,
mm-hmm.
The yuan is around 5.8%,
mm-hmm.
the yen is around 6.6%, and the British pound is around 2.6%.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as we follow the price of the dollar, maybe something else that we can look at is how the Kenyan shilling is trading against the euro. And I feel like, I don't know, this doesn't give me any form of hope.
Interesting. Interesting.
Maybe something else that I saw,
mm-hmm.
something else that I saw locally is equity through FinServ, mm-hmm. which is the fintech subsidiary
of the bank.
Yes, mm-hmm. it's rolled out 4G network,
mm-hmm.
to rival Safaricom,
mm-hmm.
and I think earlier we covered that,
mm-hmm.
Safaricom was also trying to wrap up their 4G efforts,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what are you expecting from this one in terms of do you think the more 4G players we have in the market is maybe going to push down the cost of data? I know Airtel and Telkom already have it, but then you think maybe the entry of FinServ through Equitel is going to affect the cost of data?
Not really. In my opinion, not really.
Uh-huh.
I think it's important to look at what the numbers look like, right?
Yeah.
Equitel, I think, in total, they have more than about 1.5 million subscribers,
uh-huh.
right? But how many of those consume their data services? About 0.4%. They have a 0.4% market share in the mobile data market, in the mobile data.
Jesus.
And which is equivalent to about 170,000 subscribers. Can you really compare that to the millions,
no.
over 40 million that Safaricom already has?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's not that significant on the Equitel side. Their focus should be on the transaction and the mobile money side. But on the data side, I don't think it's gonna be any different from what they've had before.
Yeah, just to give you context, FinServ here is trying to outmuscle Safaricom, and Safaricom offers around 77%,
mm-hmm.
77% 4G coverage,
mm-hmm.
in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
But then hear this, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
As of last year, in as much as regardless of the coverage, have you ever asked yourself how many 4G devices we have in Kenya?
I believe they
just
should.
give me a hypothetical figure. How many do you think we have?
4G devices?
Yes.
80,000?
No, give me a percentage out of maybe total devices.
Less than 5%.
It's around 17%.
What the hell?
Yes, I know. So in as much as I see telecoms, I get the rationale of FinServ of moving towards 4G,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's still that device gap,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and I feel like maybe we could
maybe this,
mm-hmm.
is my view. You see what Safaricom is trying to do by financing purchase of devices, and then,
mm-hmm.
you pay via airtime. I think there's a way you can do that, or you pay through this. They have this program with Google called
the 20 bob program.
Yeah,
I remember the one where they were offering, was it the Neon Ray Pro?
Yeah.
Which costs around, it retails for around 6,000, and you were supposed to pay 20 bob every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that would be a great initiative, but then you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like maybe from a regulation point of view, maybe there's something that could be done,
mm-hmm.
just to allow people to access more high-end devices at lower prices.
Mm-hmm. And what's that
taxes.
Could be done?
Here's the thing. I feel,
mm-hmm.
like the shortcut to local production would be either, you know what, let's cut taxes on mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
B, let's find ways where we can produce Samsungs and the Nokias in Kenya.
Mm-hmm. Are we there yet in terms of doing productions of some of these?
There was one on the street that we actually, there was a time Samsung had an offer for us to produce here, but then the demand for kickbacks pushed them away, and then they started considering
Ethiopia. And what happened when did they set up in Ethiopia?
I am really, really not so sure. I never followed up that story.
Mm-hmm.
But then there was that.
Yeah. I remember the last guys who made an attempt to do production of phones in the region were, they were called Mara, what's the name?
Uh-huh.
Mara this company owned by this Ugandan entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
He had partnered with a country member of the organization. So they've done some sort of a partnership to start production in Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's, it's called Marathons.
Right.
So it's buy, and you buy them online. So it's Africa's first Android smartphone. And from it's actually built by, do you know a company called Mara, owned by this guy, what's his name? It's an entrepreneur from Uganda, if I'm not wrong. But then they established a partnership with, I think, one of these leading phone manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
To do the production in India. I think it's already, it's more of like a wait list that they have. Not sure if the production has already begun.
So kind of like what we have with Mopius?
Something like that.
I don't know, man.
Maybe that could be a potential solution.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if it will work.
So I feel like if we have close to 80% coverage,
mm-hmm.
by one telco, it's maybe we need to do something to ramp up the devices.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, do you think, because in other countries,
mm-hmm.
In other countries, you can actually buy your device with a plan,
mm-hmm.
and then you pay part for the plan and pay for the usage.
Mm-hmm.
You think that could be something that we can adopt here? Because that's what Sprint does, that's what Verizon does.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we see that Americans are easily upgrade to the next iPhone as soon as it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are actually not bought at retail prices, but then they're accessed through the provider.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think we can do maybe to, do you think we're there as a country to have such plans where, you know what, a Kenyan can be given a phone,
mm-hmm.
with a plan, and then they can pay for their Safaricom usage or their Airtel usage together with the phone, and then once we have an upgrade on the phone, the company can return the phone and then upgrade the plan? Do you think our credit system
not yet? I think it depends. We aren't that developed. This is my own opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there is a partnership, say, between a financial institution,
mm-hmm.
a phone manufacturer, to enter into such a program. We don't do most of the production locally.
Right.
And then when you see the kind of phones that Kenyans or people in Africa use, they're the low-end quality smartphones,
mm-hmm.
right? Are mostly the ones are manufactured in China, right? Right?
Yeah, sure.
Most
right.
of the smartphones locally are actually manufactured out of China and sold locally.
Uh-huh.
So, and if you look at, say, you wanted your bank or your financial institution to finance a phone worth, say, $1,000 and above, locally most smartphones cost
between $100 and $300.
Yeah, actually.
So that's your typical Infinix,
yeah.
Techno, and the high-end ones are Samsungs and the iPhones of the day.
Yeah.
I feel like that could be an opportunity for maybe for Transion to partner with local players. I mean, come on. The Techno and the Infinix is literally the Toyota of phones in Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Why not find ways to, you know, because here's the thing, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Safaricom through M-Pesa has what I would call a really, really narrowed down data that would allow them to lend to people, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, almost everyone has a Safaricom line, and that has enough of the KYC details.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we have a plan where someone can access? Because Lipa Mdogo Mdogo is for the Neon Raper, which is, it's a 4G phone, but then, The neon rate could be for someone who is just trying to go digital, but then the digital intensive people will probably require a phone that costs around between 24 to 30K. Why can't Safaricom partner with Transion to take up that opportunity?
It's a potential opportunity. I'm sure it's something they've thought internally.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the start is the recent partnership with
Google.
With Google.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the uptake has been quite good. like massive. I think they've already given out from the last investor, from the last investor communication or investor presentation, if I remember correctly, they did, I'm not sure, but I think they've done quite in thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it should be over 100,000 since that program.
I don't know. Well, I guess it's something we'd have to pick up with Sylvia Mulinge, Eric.
Yeah.
Maybe looking at other events, mm-hmm. other events globally. There's something that I saw in today's headline,
mm-hmm.
and it's that job losses are forcing many Kenyans to sort of terminate their contributions in circles. And the statistics were pegged at around 1.3 million Kenyans actually stopped saving in circles because of losing jobs, which pushed the number of dormant members,
mm-hmm.
in circles.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's been, you know, the pandemic significantly affected the income levels of most of the people locally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And across the world. So I think for me, it's just like it was expected, right?
Yeah.
Because these are people, once they got their salary circles was part of their investing or savings and investing plans, right? So what happens when you don't have the cash to invest in circles and some of this? So I think it was it was expected, the decline was expected. And the number is quite huge. If you look at 1.3 million, which means then the job losses must have been massive. Remember, what of those people that haven't been saving in circles, right? It's quite huge.
I feel like, you know, apart from the job losses, like there's of course the job losses aspect that made guys pull out. But I would argue that it's actually the cost of living that has forced guys even further.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, look, this year compared to last year, all of a sudden you're paying more for gas, you're paying more for airtime,
mm-hmm.
you are paying more for fuel if you're driving around. If you're not,
mm-hmm.
you're paying more for fare because A, COVID-19 regulations in matatus,
mm-hmm.
B, high cost of fuel, cost of transport.
You're
paying more for food. Just looking at inflation numbers of the past 3 months, what are we to save apart from saving ourselves?
Yeah.
You know,
apparently the number of people saving in circles is quite huge. We have about 5.4 million Kenyans saving in circles.
Shit,
quite huge. Compare that to how many people invest in the stock market. Right, we have about 1.4 million CDS accounts, right? And out of those 1.4 million, active could be less than
3%, mm-hmm.
or even less than 5%. So, which means there's a massive interest in circles, and Kenyans understand circles much better than they would understand your formal financial market, which is the stock market.
Question, Eric.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like as a country we overemphasize on
Salvarius, you can feel free to contribute to this particular podcast. So we have listeners already listening.
Okay.
Yeah. So maybe Ali on the circus, Salvarius is one of our guests today, will be more than happy to contribute.
Yes, please.
Okay, what I can make, they say they agree with you, I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, the cost of living has totally participated in the savings.
Mm-hmm.
The job loss, we can all agree that we are facing a very tough year,
mm-hmm.
a tough financial
mm-hmm.
times.
Mm-hmm.
So chances of people even savings
mm-hmm.
are literally not possible.
Right.
Yes.
Interesting. So locally,
sorry. Before we move on to CSE. Now that Felix, our market guy, is here, I feel like sometimes people pull out of savings, and you know what? I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, how much interest do we get from savings in the best saving plans in Kenya? How much interest will it give you?
Interesting. So I think when you look at the formal financial markets,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think this is the best approach to look at it, right?
Yeah.
A bank will give you the standard rate from the benchmark rate from central bank is about 7%, right?
Right.
And what's the highest you can get in, say, a government bond or a T-bill or even short-term government bonds? So up to 12%, right? 11%, 9%, depending on the tenure, right?
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So which means if a bank or a fund manager would ideally take your funds, give you a return of about 10%, right? Either they will lend this as a cash management product to the bank,
mm-hmm.
or a cash deposit, right? Or alternatively, they will invest this in government bonds, get that 12%, 13%, right? Depending on how the tenure looks like. But my thinking is, assuming we're getting 12% rate, and the inflation is at around what, 7%. So will you prefer leaving your money in the bank, giving a fund manager? And yet when you look at our local equities, the performance, it's apart from Safaricom and a few local banks, I think the rest of the companies aren't performing good. And when you look at, say, the benchmark index, say the NSE 20 share or the All Share Index, year on year, I don't know how, maybe Felix can give us an overview about how has the NSE, the index been on year on year basis.
Hi guys, I believe the All Share Index has really improved. The overall market activity for the NSE has really been up. At least if you're looking at this from a year ago. Last year the market was pretty hit by the pandemic despite posting a few gains here and there, but we know the overall activity. If you're looking at the All Share Index, which really just encompasses the entire activity of the market, the All Share Index was down, but now we're seeing the All Share Index almost back up to levels of about 180, and we're also seeing the 20 Share Index also back to levels of close to 2000. And I know that's a psychological mark for a lot of investors on the market. And also we're also looking at the 25 share index also probably turning on the positive edge to some extent. So I think the market overall has really been on a positive edge year on year.
Ali was asking, when you compare the local savings rate, what's the standard rate that a bank or a financial institution will give you for your savings?
I think most banks would always give you less than your savings. Unless you give them an additional security. Because here's an example. You want to go to the bank and this is why a lot of guys are running to SACCOs. Because, you know, most people join SACCOs majorly because a SACCO would give you like three or twice the amount of your savings. Most of our financial institutions, even if you have your car and your logbook, they will do a valuation and they can only give you up to a certain limit. Even if you had your shares on the market and you wanted to take a lien through those shares, the bank will not give you the valuation of the stock, the current valuation of the stock. They would always give, I think, about 70 or 80%. So the overall activity, I think, for most of our financial institutions, to some extent, it also matters about the credit worth of guys, because they're often, if it's you and I, Eric, there's a high possibility that, okay, let me speak for myself. if it's me here, the bank would probably just give me, you know, maybe an equivalent of the savings I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would also look onto a lot of other aspects, which I know most other financial institutions, like SACCOs, don't really look into. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, because my this is what I was looking at. Look, we've seen that around 1.3 million Kenyans have pulled out their savings out of SACCOS. Business Daily says it's because of job losses, which is true, by the way. But then I feel like an even bigger problem with savings, even when guys have jobs, is the fact that, looking at our inflation rate, looking at what most financial institutions have to offer, it makes zero sense to save. like
I think
July inflation was 6.44%.
Ali, can I disagree with you?
Go for it.
One of the things that I think it's not because of inflation or anything. Even before that, let's just say it from an honest perspective, is that Kenyans lack basic personal finance skills. At least close to 90% of guys in our economy. If you ask how many people have savings, how many of your friends, look at a level of between 1 to every 10 Kenyans, and you'll probably get that close to 7 or 8 do not have a savings, or even an emergency kit. Leave alone a long-term savings plan.
So it's just vibes and inshallah.
Yeah, come on. I think it's just that now, you know, we're getting the reality that guys who are contributing to SACCOs have probably stopped making that contribution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but even before that, the savings culture for Kenyans were very, very bad.
What's the percentage in terms when you compare that to the overall population? Less than 5%?
I think, yeah. I'd probably bring it at less than 5% to do active savings.
Okay,
you know,
remember.
You know, one of the things that I think somebody once said, I think it's the former CBK governor,
mm-hmm.
and he said that most of us as Kenyans are probably a job loss away from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a time when you're seeing various statistics, and most people would say that, okay, I know times there's always where economists always say that because of the economic indicators that most Kenyans are just an illness away from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
But let's be honest, I think by looking by the number of a lot of things, starting from crime, the way crime has gone up, and the way a lot of guys are probably moved back home, if you're looking at high-end real estate projects, none of them are really being taken up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think guys, it's either this is when the need of financial well-being really hits somebody,
mm-hmm.
or to some extent, this is the moment when a lot of guys, you know, started thinking of, can I go back home, somewhere back in the village, or can I probably just now, you lost your job in March 2020, and you have to hold on, you're probably living in a house that is earning, you're paying like 30 G's a month, and you have that 300K because you're probably being paid, you're well paid. Those companies that let off a lot of employees with a little bit of a package,
mm-hmm.
And you're left off with that, and now you're wondering, and that's where, even on social media, we've met these groups, a lot of Facebook groups, you'd see a lot of people really ask, how can I have 100,000. I lost my job. How can I make this into some profit? You know,
mm-hmm.
and nobody's looking. So that would just tell you, even looking at the investing culture, a lot of people really, really need that bit. So I really don't think at least the 1.3 million guys who dropped off investing in SACCOs is really from a point of saying that, you know, like maybe it's because of job losses, inflation. Well, those are there.
Mm-hmm.
The inflation in Kenya, it's not like there's any point when we've had like a very significant negative inflation.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016, in 2017, the fuel prices went up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're talking about fuel, at the same time, during the election period, I think we had one of the highest inflation rates. The price of stuff like unga hit 122.
Mm-hmm.
Until in January, when the new government came in January 2017, when did we have the election, man? 2017. Yeah, sorry. When the new guys, when Uhuru came back to power, they actually did a subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yeah.
So if guys are crying of inflation, that's the reason why they've stopped saving. I think probably just that one thing an economist would say, but an analyst,
mm-hmm.
no, I really don't think would say that. Yeah. I mean that's it. Yeah.
Moving on, taxes, the least favorite thing to do in adulting. We saw that. I think the carer gave out a legal notice earlier this week, indicating that the prices of specific products will be adjusted by 4.97%, termed as inflation adjustments on exercise duty. And some of the products that will be affected include motorcycles, exempting locally accepted bikes,
mm-hmm.
Bottled water, as well as beer, cider, Perry, me and OPEC beer, Eric, sorry. I mean, I know Tusker people in the room, and cigarettes and stuff. And my specific concern is cigarettes. Cigarettes, because we saw that, also I think this week is when BT was saying that cigarette consumption has dipped because of increasing prices.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How do you think this is working? I saw this tweet where the government increases the taxes on commodities, yes?
Mm-hmm.
The prices go up, yeah? Inflation kicks in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The government increases the taxes of those commodities based on the earlier, on the inflation, which again kicks up the price,
mm-hmm.
which kicks up inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Is this like a negative high price feedback loop, Felix?
As if they were never going to tax it anyway.
Interesting.
No,
you know,
like Eric, look at it from this point where we're in a country where even guys who smoke cigarette have stopped smoking because the price of cigarette is high.
I mean, that's one way to fight cancer.
But then I think from what you were taught back in campus or high school,
mm-hmm.
the government usually to discourage consumption of some of these products like cigarettes and alcohol, they'll do what? They'll have to tax, to increase taxes on this. In 2019, there was a 20% increase, right?
Mm-hmm.
In last October, there was a 5% increase, right? On cigarettes, right?
Right.
And coming back whereby BAT saying, look, our sales dipped, yet BAT has been one of those top performing companies from a revenue standpoint, that means things are bad. So, and from what I saw that put out is that they were eyeing export markets also outside Kenya,
right,
to increase their sales. So,
I don't know, I think our government is really used in they always like taxing areas that touch on utilities. You know, to somebody who's smoking a cigarette, that cigarette is basically their utility, and the numbers of consumption are basically high. Because if you're looking at utility from an economic standpoint, then utilities basically mean something that is of constant use to somebody. While we're looking on to one end where the consumption of cigarette is dropping, and I know the government will definitely want that to go down because we're also having a huge number of cancer cases really going up. But Eric, you have to agree that the main reason why the government really is looking on these areas is because this is where nowadays, you know, they're looking at sectors that are rapidly growing. We saw the data recently from KNBS regarding consumption of alcohol, and even the data from EABL where they say that, okay, no, yeah, the data from EABL where they gave consumption statistics, and that actually showed that even during the pandemic, the rate of consumption of some of these products, like spirits, for example, went really high. So if the government really wants to raise money, then what the best option they would do is to look at the areas in which guys are actively moving into. An example is the government bringing in taxes to mobile loans, because that is one thing that guys are really coming into. Guys are nowadays accustomed to the police and everything else. Another way is governments bringing in taxes to home internet, because the government knows that the internet penetration is definitely going high. For BAT, I think it really comes in at a very weird time for the government to really bring in tobacco products, because this is not the first time. For the past like 5 financial years, there is no single year that the government has not brought in something that directly impacted companies like BAT and EABL.
Mm-hmm.
So what level are we looking at? What level of taxation? Because you'd find that to some extent, these companies will be making money, but in the long run, you'll figure that maybe about 40 or something percent will be paid directly in taxes. Remember, these companies still have to pay corporate taxes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then on the product, there'll be a VAT which is being charged as well. Then this VAT is now sort of dynamic. It's no longer that whether it's the VAT, and what taxes are that they're bringing in, the VAT that they'll be able to review for the government.
Exercise duty.
Yeah, exercise duty.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at all these taxes that are coming in one way or another, it's still going to be a major challenge. And you know, this trickles down to the lowest point of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember that down there, there's a farmer who's probably planting their tobacco right now, hoping that VAT would come back and buy them at the same price. So, or even at a better price, actually. But do you think this will continue if the company's top margin is being hit at every moment?
Yeah. I think we saw that at the height of the pandemic when EABL even cut down on the sorghum that they were buying from farmers, right? So it of course affects even the lowest man in the value chain.
Anyway, new life.
Felix, this is not something I want to touch, but we had a special request on CAC. We saw that I know it's something that you'll definitely talk about more on Markets Monday, but we saw that CAC Insurance reported 260 million net profit, up from a net loss same time last year, a net loss of 335 million. And we had some of our listeners who were wondering whether what's happening in the counter, rather. Is it underpriced or is it overpriced?
Sorry guys, I cannot be able to confirm to you guys if the company is underpriced or overpriced, because I think that would be giving an investment recommendation, which I believe I am not in a position to do so at this time. But one of the things that we've seen about CIC over time is this jumps. CIC's profits and losses are usually like whipsaw. They would post a profit this year, then the next, like, you know, the next three or four times they would possibly post a decline in earnings. Because I think the last time we saw this, and we're looking at this from the point of and like, guys will definitely just ask themselves what really changed in the company's balance sheet. Or was it their asset? Was it their balance sheet? Did they retire some loans? So there are a lot of things that we're now looking at. But the most important thing an investor would look at outside that performance, just as a brief, because most of this will be able to see next week when you're talking about Markets Monday.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing that now we'll be looking at would be that the EPS for CIC right now is at 0.06, which is like 6 cents. And that's lower from, that's a bit higher compared to negative 0.13, where the EPS for the company was at a previous time last year. So maybe if we can leave it at that early, and then we'll touch a little bit more on CIC during the Markets Monday podcast.
Definitely. Maybe looking at what's been happening regionally, Felix, what's something that happened in Africa that caught your attention? For me, it's Ethiopia, and I'll get to it.
I was just about to say Ethiopia is becoming quite a stress, man. It's not the business aspect, but really, I don't know. Ali, you want to talk about it?
For me, Ethiopia, first of all, we've seen that the conflict between the Tigrayan forces and Ethiopia is escalating, to the point where Ethiopia is actually calling upon its citizens to help fight the Tigrayan forces. And the thing is, this is not quite the welcome news that companies entering the market or investors looking to go to the place are really, really looking up to.
Can we just say this is not what Safaricom was hoping to?
My thing is, my worry would be like, hey, do you think if this continues like this till the end of the year, Safaricom Ethiopia might have to go slower than it actually is?
I actually think whenever markets are down, it gives us an opportunity to invest. Safaricom might be, you know, like the main challenge that these guys are having in Ethiopia is in the northern region of Ethiopia,
mm-hmm.
specifically the Tigray region. Unless there is a fully, probably outlawed civil war in Ethiopia right now,
mm-hmm.
I think Safaricom Ethiopia can easily expand and invest in other areas.
Interesting.
Just starting off with Addis, man.
Look, don't you think the tensions will escalate towards the other parts of Ethiopia? Look at it this way.
Scary, yeah.
Scary.
Mm-hmm.
There's this called, can you even call it a guerrilla or what? Oromo Liberation Army, right?
Yeah.
They announced this week that they're joining forces with the Tigray Defense Forces.
Exactly.
Right? And there was some news that the Tigray Defense Forces had actually blocked, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of a very major entry that's used to transport foodstuff, some of these major like things that they rely on to Ethiopia and the most at the central part of the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's one. And for me, the most worrying thing about this entire thing is on, you know, war is very expensive, right?
Yeah.
Do you know Ethiopia, the Tigray guys actually took one of the cities called Mekele, right, Felix?
Yeah.
They took over Mekele, that's one. But war is very expensive, right? Ethiopia, right now, the government has a cash crunch, right? The US government has ordered both the World Bank and the IMF not to fund Ethiopia.
The DFC, man.
Right?
I don't know if that, though the DFC said that their investment into Safaricom's consortium won't really be impacted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's still a concern.
It's a major concern. Like a major concern.
Yeah, I mean, like.
Because I've seen actually videos circulating of this Oromo and the Tigray Defense was actually arresting soldiers from the Ethiopian government.
Yeah, I saw them. But then, you know, one of the things that I think Eric is so good
mm-hmm.
is that there's some level of humanitarian touch in all this. Because there are even videos where the soldiers would greet each other with the opposing forces, and they would even give food to the other side. So. There's some sort of humanitarian touch. I think maybe Abiy should just sit down. Like, this is a Peace Prize winner, you know, he's a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Mm-hmm.
The things I think he can do to bring that state of anarchy or that state of
civilians. No, look at it.
Because actually Ethiopia is not telling civilians to back.
Imagine to join the army.
Man.
Look, Ethiopia was like the fastest growing country in Africa in terms of GDP for
yeah.
the last decade.
Yeah.
10 plus year on year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you think they'll be able to achieve that with what's happening currently? No.
Who's even going to want to put their investment in Ethiopia?
Exactly.
Because right now we're seeing companies that we hoped would have become major players in the telco side.
Mm-hmm.
We saw MTN say that they're not going to make an application for that license in Ethiopia. The second license which Ethiopian government, the Ethiopian Communication Authority,
mm-hmm.
is offering. So, I don't know, man. It's a huge stress. As a Safaricom shareholder, this is something you should be worried about if you're listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a major concern. Yeah.
I think this just kind of points out the extent to which some conflicts regionally or internationally in the end come to affect investors in the local stock market in one way or another, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe Asuma, onto global news.
Mm-hmm.
Felix,
mm-hmm.
did you know that Adidas owns Reebok?
No, I didn't.
See, I told you it's not common knowledge.
No, like come on, we've always thought that these are rivals.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Interesting.
So,
they actually bought it back in when was it? They actually bought it back around 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like I was shocked when I read about the
deal that they had sold this to Authentic Brands for about 2.1 billion euros, right?
Yeah. But I hear that was mostly because of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Shareholder.
Oh, to be paid in it actually the deal is in cash.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means they use the funds to pay dividends, right? As you said, shareholder pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I remember, something that I was reading earlier this week, that Adidas actually acquired Reebok in 2005, not 2015.
2006 around.
Yeah, and they bought it for 3.8 billion US. No, they bought it for how much? For, yeah, 3.8 billion US dollars. Which means they've sold it at a discount.
Yeah. But then, see, the plan of acquiring Reebok was that it's going to sort of boost its arsenal, no pun intended,
mm-hmm.
to take over Nike, but then that didn't really quite happen.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So a huge part of the acquisition price actually is gonna be paid in cash, and that's which I think will close earlier next year.
Yeah. Interesting. Maybe the other thing that was mentioned during the week, in addition to this Adidas and Reebok news, Felix probably been following up, was on the Airbnb results, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quite significant numbers, good numbers, strong numbers. Apart from, I think we saw Baidu also release their results for the Chinese tech company, and also quite strong results. The other thing that also caught my attention was on the Walt Disney results.
Mm-hmm.
Felix, I'm sure you've been following on that. At such a period, I think they reported that, for me, what caught my eye was, of course, the revenue, which was up nearly 50% to 17 billion, net income of about 923 million US dollars. Now the Disney Plus subscribers actually rose up by more than 100% to 116 million subscribers. That's quite significant.
I think for us in Kenya, we're so used to Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
You have Disney Plus?
I barely have Netflix.
Okay.
I'm not really the streaming person.
Have you invested, or have you bought, or are you subscribed to Disney Plus?
No, I've subscribed to Netflix.
We've always been used to Disney as a cartoon and childish stuff, so then bringing Disney Plus.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that really pushed up their earnings was the launch of Marvel's Black Widow, because
mm-hmm.
they literally split 50-50 in terms of revenue,
mm-hmm.
with the old style cinemas like AMC and American Studios, you know. So I think that was something that really stood out for Disney. But it's because guys are also figuring out that Disney rights can be bought by every other company. You know, Netflix movies on Netflix, you can only get them on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless somebody figures out one way or another to get the rights. But I think it's pretty much interesting how this comes in.
Yeah, I think something else is that caught up. I think this is gonna be my last thing for the discussion was, would you advertise on the spacecraft, Felix? I know that's something you've been following.
Yeah. Definitely would.
How much does it cost to advertise via Doge?
I think you need to figure out. Maybe we can ask Elon that question.
Because I remember, I think earlier this week I saw on Twitter that Morning Brew had actually tweeted at Doge at Elon, asking them that, hey, we're willing to advertise, and I found that. I found this to be a very, very interesting marketing angle, like advertising on, like having a digital billboard going into space. And also I feel like it being paid via Doge is kind of, it's Elon's ongoing campaign towards Dogecoin.
How many Doges do we have? The only thing about Dogecoin that's usually weird is, the weirdest thing about Dogecoin is it's basically a meme. it's a meme coin. It's valued at where it is because of memes. If memes are not there,
mm-hmm.
I don't know where that coin would be valued, but a lot of cheers to the founders.
Do you think the fact that it's a meme coin kind of weighs against it, such that maybe high net worth, apart from Elon, like high net worth individuals wouldn't look at Dogecoin the same way they look at Ether or Bitcoin?
Just say that again.
Do you think the fact that it's a meme coin means like it doesn't get the same seriousness that high net worth individuals would look at it compared to Ether and BTC?
And here's the basic question. If I gave you those dummy coins,
yes,
the dummy coins, and I raised a Bitcoin on this side and on my left hand, and I raised a Dogecoin, a smiling dog, on your hand, which one would you laugh at?
The dog.
Exactly.
Right.
Thank you.
I don't know. I think it's something that we'll have to wait and see. This is actually all we had for today. Guys, we had a fire discussion 2 days ago on what happened with the hack at, what's the name of the company, Felix?
Poly Network.
Thank you.
Oh my God, it was
I know.
It was a work, like WHAK with hyphen there for hack, you know?
Right.
But it's very funny if you look on the transcript, which the hacker gave back. Whenever he was giving the coins, he would give them a story. You know, he was actually telling them, I was infiltrating this and I'm storing the coins at a safe place because there's a high possibility your employees might have left that so that they can come back and hack that. And the good thing is that, as I think he's returned, he only has probably about 50 million.
He's returned over 700. I think it was just half last time I checked.
He returned 285 and then he returned another 325 this morning. Yeah.
Selling them back in tranches.
Yeah, he's sending them, and all of them he sends with a message. You know, Ali, I don't know, let me just get the transcripts for you guys, and I know as we're closing the show, just so that I can be able to read it out to you. He actually says he wasn't stealing this. He had no intention of stealing and getting away with it.
Mm-hmm.
He was only doing it for fun. Guys, who hacks for fun? So he says he found out about this when he was trying to make a deposit.
Oh.
And that's how he reverse hacked all this. And so, where is it? I'm just trying to get... Yeah, he gave guys 260. He sent guys back another 385. So, yeah, he's been working. The only thing which he says was missing was... what was some Ethereum valuation of about $40,000, which he says he's waiting to pay. So still much, very interesting, really looking at it from another angle and what's likely to happen. But still, I really think it's not a bad deal for him. The only challenge is Ethereum, I think, actually said that they would stop that, they froze those transactions.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not able to reverse them, so the best they can do is just to
freeze them,
to freeze the account and the coins from being transacted on.
Yeah, I think closing down, maybe just to look at that.
But then, you know, he was actually offered a reward, a $500,000 reward from the Poly Network, and he said, "No, I'm not interested in that money."
So kind of like reward as if he's a white hat.
Yeah, exactly. He actually said, guys, actually, yeah. Let's just say he's a white hat. I don't know, feels kind of racist, but I wouldn't want to look at it from that angle. Yeah, and I think I can be able to share with you guys, if you look onto the HISA app, I'll be able to share with you guys the tweet on which the transcripts are posted. And he says he feels sorry for the people who lost their coins, but they're all safe and he's willing to probably send them back. So if you're on HISA, I'm just sharing this right now, you'll be able to find out, I think it's the latest post, and so you just figure that out and just see for yourself.
Yeah, maybe closing the discussion, looking at what some of the moments we had in the local markets. again, this is post-closing. I think the top gainer in according to Hisab today is BKG Group, which is up by 8.05%, currently closing at 38 shillings 25 cents, with volumes of around 1,400 shares traded, followed by Britam Holdings PLC is up by 5.06%. Shares traded are a whooping 4.5 million, opened at 7 shillings 90 cents and closed at 8 shillings 2 cents.
Yeah.
And after Britam, we have
Uchumi. What for Uchumi? This is your time. Looks like the Lords of the Rings have said, you know what? This is the time when we are making this. So Uchumi will start with about 4.17% in terms of price gain,
mm-hmm.
but with a turnover of only 526. 2,100 shares traded, and then also EverReady.
And then lastly, we have Cabasit, which is up 3.75%, closing at 12 shillings 45 cents.
How about the losers, man?
I usually like leaving people at a happier note, but then please read out the losers side.
Bunga Group on, oh man, Home Africa, guys. Home Africa was down, yeah, but I know next week is another week, yeah, so don't worry about it. WTK, that's Williamson T. Kenya, was down as well. Sassini, and then guess who? Nairobi Business Ventures. I think this week, actually, let me give you guys the weekly turnover in terms of weekly data. Let me just spoil your soup, but NBV has lost 14.9% in terms of share price activity over the past 1 week. Yeah, we're back down to where we were at before, around the levels at which you were at when the year began for NBV, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry. Stay strong.
Yeah, guys, that's going to be it for today's podcast. Please be sure to check out our other podcasts directly by the HISA or on podcast.kenyanwallstreet.com. Have yourself a lovely, lovely weekend.
Bye, guys. See you guys next week and see you guys on Monday.